Matthew 4:18-22. As Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon called Peter and his brother Andrew. They were casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. "Come, follow me," Jesus said, "and I will send you out to fish for people." At once they left their nets and followed him. Going on from there, he saw two other brothers, named James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John. They were in a boat with their father Zebedee, preparing their nets. Jesus called them, and immediately they left the boat and their father and followed him.
Don't typically do this, but I want to begin this morning by talking about what we might call some family matters. A lot going on right now with our congregation, so just want to pass the word on to you about these different items. The first is we welcome Zach Baden with us. Zach is going to be working with our youth ministry this year directly with Alan. Zach just finished up his freshman year at LCU, and so we're so thankful that Zach is going to be here with us. He's local, grew up attending the Westside congregation, I believe, but we are thrilled that you're here with us for the summer. Excited to see what God's going to do through you this summer. Would you mind just standing for us? Just going to embarrass you a little bit. So this is Zach. We welcome Zach with us this summer. Yeah. Secondly, we have Vacation Bible School right around the corner, June 12th through the 14th. What I want to say about VBS at this point is be thinking now about folks that you want to invite to participate in our Vacation Bible School. Be thinking about neighbors or friends, family members. I know Mike and so many others have been working really hard to get Vacation Bible School ready. So be praying about that. Pray that God will work in a powerful way through that important activity in the life of our congregation. Also, Mike wanted me to let you know that those that are involved with VBS, specifically in the singing, in the drama, the song sheets are available here up front. In fact, he's asking those that are singing in the drama to come to the front of the auditorium at the end of the service today to pick up those song sheets. Also, we have the vision process going on right now. Tomorrow night, the vision team is going to meet for perhaps what will be the last meeting, at least as far as the vision team goes, for this important process. Please continue to pray for that. After the vision team articulates a vision, they will pass that on to the elders. Then the elders will have some time to talk about it, discuss it, and hopefully affirm that vision as we seek to live into God's vision for this congregation. Please continue to pray for that process. Also, item number 4 or 5, a fellowship meal is next Sunday after our service. Next Sunday is a fifth Sunday. Please plan to participate in that fellowship meal. And just as a reminder, what we'll do is immediately after the service in here, we'll make our way to the other end of the building. We will enjoy a time of breaking bread together, and then we will have a brief devotional down there, and that will close our services for the day. So that's coming up next Sunday. That is how we do Fifth Sundays. Speaking of Fifth Sundays, on July 31st, we are going to have a homecoming. I know Clarence Owens, along with others, have been working hard in putting that together. In fact, I saw that there are some flyers available in the foyer for that homecoming. Please take one of those flyers and then pass it on to somebody else. That's coming up July 31st. Be praying for that and planning to participate in that important event. Also, as you know, over the last few weeks, we've lost some of our brothers and sisters in Christ. Zula Conway passed away recently, along with Kendall Henderson and Elizabeth Harvey. Speaking of family matters, we share life with one another, which means that we help one another through the grieving process and sometimes we bury those that we love, but we understand that they are in the presence of God, and so we're thankful. We celebrate the victory that they've had, but we also mourn their loss. And so considering all of what I just mentioned, let's go ahead and say a prayer. Father, you're at work in us. And we say thank you for that. It's our prayer, Father, that we will humble ourselves and submit to your will so that through us, your people, you can continue to do amazing things. We're thankful for Zach being with us. We're thankful for Vacation Bible School coming up. We're thankful for the vision process. We're thankful for opportunities you give us to share in meals like our fellowship meal together, and we're thankful for opportunities we have to do things like the homecoming that's coming up. We recognize your hand at work in all of these activities and events. So it's our prayer, Father, that you will work in powerful ways. Blow us away, Father, by your might and power at work in your people. And Father, we pray for the Conway family, the Henderson family, the Harvey family, and this church family as we mourn the loss of Zula, Kendall, and Elizabeth. Father, we're thankful that in faith we recognize that they have heard those words that we all long to hear. Well done, good and faithful servants. And as we mourn, Father, bring comfort and peace to us, to your families, as only you can provide. Father, you are amazing. We thank you for Jesus Christ, the one that we follow. It's in his name. Amen. So it's the first century, and now we're wearing like robes and sandals. We're walking dusty streets, and we're following this guy named Jesus, Yeshua. We've heard a lot about him. We're wondering about him. We've noticed that as he goes around and preaches that more and more people are beginning to follow him. So we're intrigued by this man. We're intrigued by his teachings. He teaches with such authority, such power. He makes us think. He challenges us to our core. So we find ourselves gravitating to him. Perhaps we're even starting to support him financially. Perhaps we've already made sacrifices to begin to follow him. Some of our family members have said, Jesus, really? Isn't he a heretic? Is he the one that claims that he's the Son of God? Really? That's the guy that you're going to follow? You're spending all your time with this man and his followers? But here we are, day after day, finding ourselves sitting at the edge of our seats, hanging on every word that he says. There's such life and such power in his words. And then, we hear him say this. Luke chapter 14, verses 25 through 33. Starts off, the first two words of this text are large crowds. Remember, we're now part of this large crowd. Put yourself in this scene. Verse 25, large crowds were traveling with Jesus. And turning to us, he said, if anyone comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even their own life, such a person cannot be my disciple. And we think, do I really want to keep following this guy? why'd he have to say that? Perhaps we're starting to think, okay, this guy really is off his rocker. All of those who have said he's crazy, yeah, they're right. Hate family members, hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters. In the Greek, there means hate, despise, detest. Perhaps for some of those who were following Jesus, they were facing opposition from their family. So maybe what Jesus is saying is either you bow to your family or you bow to me. You have to make a choice. Or maybe more generally, he's just saying, who do you love more? Your mom, your dad, your kids, or me? Who do you love more? He says, yeah, you even have to hate your own life. Your own life. You have to hate it. And wouldn't we be so much more comfortable with this if he just said, like, dislike? Not hate. We're taught not to hate. All right? What's up with this? Jesus says, such a person, all those following him, those that are seeking to make him Lord of their lives, they are disciples, or students, learners, or apprentices. We know about an apprenticeship relationship, right? An apprentice will go around with a professional, and they will learn all they can about a trade, about some sort of job. And so someone that is in electrical work, for instance, will go and spend time with an electrician. An apprentice will spend time with an electrician. And they will expect, as they spend time with that electrician, that they are going to learn about electrical work, right? Same with plumbing. If you're in a plumber apprenticeship, you're going to learn all there is to know about plumbing. A plumber apprentice doesn't care to learn a whole bunch about electrical work, right? This makes sense. Jesus says, such a person cannot be my disciple, my apprentice. So you expect, as you spend time with Jesus, the teacher, as you spend time with him, as you learn from him, you are going to learn to do what he does, to say what he says, to follow him, to absorb his teaching, to absorb his life. A follower of Jesus, we could say, is going to learn to be like Jesus. Jesus says in verse 27, and whoever does not carry their cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. So he already said something that was, that's better. He already said something that was shocking. Hate your mother and your father, brothers and sisters. And now he says, take up your cross, carry your cross, and follow me. Whoever doesn't do that cannot be my disciple. And so let's think about the cross for a moment. The cross was a sign of humiliation. You've probably heard it before, but those who were killed on a cross were usually put on that cross naked. They were a spectacle. Everybody could see this person. And when I mean see, they could see this person raised up on a cross. Everybody knew that person was a lawbreaker. That person was an insurrectionist. That person is guilty. And Jesus says, take up this sign of humiliation. It's also a sign, very simply, a sign of death. You didn't come down from a cross alive. When you were there, you were going to be killed. And you were going to be killed in the worst kind of way. If we've again heard that before, nails driven in the hands, nails driven into the feet. But oftentimes people died through suffocation. So the weight, their weight, brought them down. They couldn't breathe any longer and die, and suffocate. So it was a sign of death. But for Christians, as we think of Jesus Christ dying on a cross, it's also a sign of selflessness. We recognize that Jesus put others before himself in going to the cross. He died not for himself, but he died for us. John 3:16 says, it's for the world that God sent his one and only Son. And Jesus says, follow me. Follow Jesus where? Well, put ourselves back in that scene, to the sick, to the broken, and yes, to the cross. And then Jesus says this, verse 28, suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Won't you first sit down and estimate the cost to see if you have enough money to complete it? For if you lay the foundation and are not able to finish it, everyone sees it and will ridicule you, saying, this person began to build and wasn't able to finish. I'm thinking about this huge like mansion house on the side of I-35. I think it's north of Denton, perhaps. You all know what I'm talking about? There's this gigantic house. I've driven by it several times. And it's got like that Tyvek siding on it. No windows, just these holes in the walls. And I always wonder about that. I want to know the story behind that huge house. I would imagine someone ran out of money at some point and couldn't finish that gigantic house. But that's the picture I get in my mind when I read verses 28 through 30. Anyways, verse 31. Or suppose a king is about to go to war against another king. Won't he first sit down and consider whether he is able with 10,000 men to oppose the one coming against him with 20,000? If he is not able, he will send a delegation while the other is still a long way off and will ask for terms of peace. Both of these little stories make sense. Jesus is saying, you're about following me, being one of my disciples, being an apprentice of mine. Count the cost. Use your mind. Think about what you're about to do. Are you ready to take up this sign of humiliation, of death, and selflessness? Are you ready for this? Perhaps the 12, those that had been with Jesus the longest, those who were closest to him, when Jesus offers a teaching like this, perhaps they're thinking, oh, Jesus, don't say that. This church is growing. It's getting bigger. We're going to have a bigger building. We're getting more money. Don't say that kind of stuff. I think there's a message there for us, the church. As we follow Jesus, we need to be true to who he is, true to his teachings. There are certain things that are attractive, right? And we go after that and we think, man, church growth movement, growth. Who could not love growth? And these passages, I think, they just hit us right between the eyes. We look at Jesus and we think, don't say that. Don't say that. Whoever hates brother and sister, whoever hates their kids, don't say that. But this is the Jesus that we follow, and he did say that. Count the cost of following me. Take up your cross and come with me. Come to the broken. Come to the hurting. Come to the truth. Verse 33, Jesus sums it up. In the same way, those of you who do not give up everything, everything you have, cannot be my disciples. Give up everything. In another place, Luke chapter 9, verses 23 and 24, and I think it's important that we read passages like this one, Luke 9, 23 and 24, and hold it together with passages like what we see in Luke 14. So Luke 9, 23 and 24. Then he said to them, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross daily and follow me. It's verse 24 is what I want us to notice this morning. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will save it. Whoever loses your life for Jesus will find it, will save it. The life that is true life, as Paul says, that the life that is true life, that is real life, is life that is found in Jesus Christ. You may have heard this poem by a man named William Reese. I would like to buy $3 worth of God, please. Not enough to explode my soul or disturb my sleep, but just enough to equal a cup of warm milk or a snooze in the sunshine. I don't want enough of God to make me love a black man or pick beets with a migrant. I want ecstasy, not transformation. I want warmth of the tomb, not a new birth. I want a pound of the eternal in a paper sack. I would like to buy $3 worth of God, please. And Jesus' teaching, it flies right in the face of that poem, right? We get the point of this. Discipleship and $3 worth of God don't go together. Jesus says, lay down your life for me. Love me more than anything else. Follow me with all that you have, all that you are. The other day, the staff, we were talking about this passage, and Whit shared that this passage just means a great deal to him. And so I've asked Whit to talk about why this passage in particular, Luke 14, why it means so much to him.
The passage that I read as I had been studying the scriptures that convinced me that I needed to follow Jesus. As I told you a few Sundays ago on Mother's Day, I grew up a mama's boy, and I love my mom, and I love my parents, and they were very good to me. And I didn't grow up in the church. I went to parochial school for 6 years and had nuns that scared me to death. And, all you'd see is their little face and this thing right here. And it was like, and it was kind of scary for a child. But I grew up and I learned about God. I learned about believing in Him and everything. But when I got to my college years, I kind of departed that. And I kind of lived some wild living. I was doing things that I didn't need to be doing. And so something brought me back, that seed of faith, which I think I was given, started to grow, and I started to want to know more about Jesus. And the one thing we never did in 6 years of parochial school that I was there was picked up a Bible. We were given catechism. They told us what to believe, but I started reading the scriptures. And I came to that passage. I'd been reading the Gospels, and I came to Luke chapter 14. My parents knew I was searching for something else. They didn't like it. They didn't want me to change or to go another direction. And I said, I'm just reading the scriptures, and I've got these questions, because I would read about Jesus' brothers, and I wasn't ever taught there was Jesus' brothers. And then Jesus said, call no man father. And I read that in the scriptures, but I was taught to call a man father. And I was going through all of this, and I just said, there's something not right here. And so I came to this passage, and I had to make a decision between my parents and what they wanted for me, people I loved with all my heart, and my God. Because I read in the book of Acts how to submit to Him in faith. If I really wanted to follow Him, and you read in Acts chapter 2, of course, and then Acts chapter 8, and you see these examples of conversion. I said, I'm the one that has to make this decision. This is between me and God. And so I had to take the love that I had for my parents, and I had to set it aside. And they did not like it, and even to the point of threatening to disown me as their son. And I made the decision based on what Jesus said here, that I had to give up my life. I had to lay it down so that I could really take it up. And that's the reason I'm standing here today. Is because, and that's the reason I've been a minister. And that's the reason, is because I had to lay it all down in order to find it. And now I have amazing life. God has blessed me with an amazing life. But I remember the night I called my parents and told them, I'm a Christian. I was baptized today. And my mom just started crying, and then she handed the phone to my dad, and he said, I guess you're not our son anymore. I want you to know, for probably a couple of years, it was very difficult in my relationship with my parents. But here's the thing. Because I love God, He restored that love to me. He restored the love of my parents and made it actually, in many ways, better in that relationship with them. And they began to see that I really meant what I said when I became a Christian. And then I became a minister, and they were like, and they were surprised. But at the same time, I sensed pride in them for me, that I was doing something for God. And so I want to say to you, you must count the cost, because there is a cost to following Jesus. He demands our very life. And oftentimes this world gives us so many options that we miss the simplicity of what He's saying. He said, take up your cross and follow me.
Thank you so much, Whit, and it's a powerful testimony right there. I appreciate you so much for sharing that. I just appreciate you. So in Matthew 25, this is where Jesus is praying to His Father before He goes to the cross. Going a little further, He fell with His face to the ground and prayed, My Father, if it is possible, may this cup be taken from me, yet not as I will, but as you will. And then skipping to verse 42, He went away a second time and prayed, My Father, if it is not possible for this cup to be taken away unless I drink it, may your will be done. So discipleship is about submitting our will to God's. It's ultimately about wanting God's will done in our lives, in our marriages, with our families, with our children. Ultimately, thinking about Adeline and Audrey, ultimately, I want God's will to be done in their lives. And I ask as a church that you help me as I parent them to see that God's will is done in their lives. In our neighborhood, we want to see God's will be done. In our church, our hope is that God's will be done. If this vision process isn't about God's desire and will for us in this place at this time, if it's not about God's will, what are we doing? What are we doing? This is about God's will being done. And so the question that I'll leave you with today is, whose will? Whose will do you desire to be done? You see Jesus, before going to the cross, saying, Father, not my will, but yours be done. For you, whose will do you desire to be done? I pray that it's the Father's. If there's anybody here today that desires the prayers of the church family, as usual, here in just a moment, Alan's going to lead us in an invitation song. You can come down here to the front, share what's on your heart. We'd be glad to pray with you or for you. We'll also have shepherds in the back. You can share with them or find a brother or sister and say, hey, I need some help. I need some prayers. We want to be a church that just bears each other's burdens. If there's anybody here today that is ready to lay your life down in the waters of baptism, giving your life over to Christ, we would be thrilled, elated to witness you make that incredible decision today. So whatever need that you have, you can come forward now as we stand and continue to worship our amazing God.